The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Anton Schutz joins us now. He's president of Mendon Capital, portfolio manager for the Burnham Financial Services Fund. Good morning and welcome.
Always a pleasure, Kathleen.
Always great to have you here. We got so much to talk about, from B of A and other big banks' earnings to the Fed, the potential move to taper off on bond purchases, and of course the latest on bank capital requirements that are being proposed. But let's just start with B of A, because we really haven't talked much about it today. A good earnings report?
Yes, I think it was slightly better than expected. I think the bar was set pretty high. JP Morgan had good numbers. Citi had good numbers. And, Goldman's numbers weren't terrific, but the bar had been set so high, they sold Goldman yesterday. So everybody, was waiting with bated breath today for Bank of America, since a lot of people were long it, waiting for a good number. And I think they delivered.
Okay. Now, our headline focuses on the fact that their profit was up 63% on quote-unquote expense controls. They've been cutting a lot of costs. So what kind of growth are they seeing?
Well, that's the real question. The growth on the revenue side didn't beat. But people are pleased with the capital ratios. People are pleased that earnings are actually dropping the bottom line. It sounds like the litigation reserves are getting near the end. So the growth is a real question as far as revenues. In terms of earnings, we can see credit actually helping earnings again into the future. And we can see them actually hold the margin. They did quite well on the interest rate margin, which has been a big factor for the big banks.
If you had to rate Bank of America's healthiness on a scale of 1 to 10 at this point, where would you rank them?
Well, they a lot of the big banks were closer to 2s or 3s, at the bottom or worse. I'd say Bank of America is getting back there quite strongly. So I'd actually probably give them a 7 or an 8. And, we just need to get past this litigation for them to get really stronger numbers.
Okay, you own Bank of America in your funds.
We do.
Why? What kind of, from where it is now, where do you see it going?
Well, we could certainly see, mid-teens without too much difficulty. And we could certainly, going out into the future, we could certainly see upper teens to low 20s. The real question is, going back a number of years, a lot of people thought they could earn, $2 plus on an annual basis. Right now they're certainly not showing that kind of earnings power, but we'd certainly like to see all their businesses humming, and I think they could certainly, earn in the $1.50 to $2 range, and that would bode for an upper teens to low 20 stock.
You also own Citi.
We do.
I guess you must have liked their earnings report yesterday.
Yeah, I think Citi is doing all the right things. I mean, I think two of the big themes is, banks are cutting costs because we're in a low growth environment, and credit is getting much, much better. And I think those are really the common themes that are running through this industry. I think the things that are not running through the banking industry right now that people are waiting for is the impact of higher interest rates benefiting the banks. And I think that the trade has been sort of wrong so far, with those buying banks saying, hey, look at the big move in 10-year yields. Banks are going to make a lot more money. And, most banks price most of their loans off of short-term interest rates, such as prime and LIBOR, and those rates really haven't moved. And unfortunately, what else is happening now, and we've seen it at a couple of the regionals so far, is we've seen some short-term deposits actually leave as people start to find something that's more attractive on a yield basis, and they're leaving the banks as deposits.
A lot of people are positive on Citi, it seems, because of the new management. Real bankers, some people say, right? Is that an important part of your owning Citi right now?
I've owned Citi for quite a while, and I think Vikram was really maligned. I think he was moving at a very good, deliberate pace. I think O'Neill, the chairman, wanted to move at a faster pace, and I think they disagreed on the speed of the moves. But I think Vikram did a pretty good job and saved the bank. People said he wasn't a banker, but, running one of these big companies, it is not rocket science. And by the way, Vikram is incredibly intelligent. So, is the current CEO, Corbett, a lifelong Citi guy? Yes, he is. And yes, he is a banker. But the obvious is there. Continue to cut costs at Citi Holdings. Continue to shrink the balance sheet there. Get it to even. Get it to no longer be a drag. And I think, certainly the recovery in the housing market has really helped them shed a lot of those assets. But, you know, the speed hasn't picked up. I mean, there's a lot of speed early on, and it's just a slow, steady process to wind that down. But if you get rid of that as a drag, there could be a lot of reserves that could be released, and those will show up in earnings, and they'll show up in capital.
J.P. Morgan is another big bank you own. It seems like if most anybody who likes big banks seems to like, if not love, J.P. Morgan. What are the prospects, though, for a further rise in the stock price?
Well, you know, J.P. Morgan, you know, is leading market share in just about everything, and they're quite good at it. So, you know, the rising price of J.P. Morgan stock will really have to go with, can they show $6 to $7 worth of earnings in the future? You know, years and years ago, you know, during the crisis, I said, hey, the stock is silly. They're going to earn $6 in the future. I think they've proven they can get on a $6 earnings run rate annually. Can they get to $7 now? And, you know, if you really want to look at it and go, all right, what kind of multiple you want to put on the best financial institution on the planet, you know, if you put a 10 or 12 multiple on that kind of earnings power, you still have a lot of upside in the stock.
Let's talk about some of the other banks that you own, a couple of regionals that you particularly are positive on.
Sure. You know, Upstate New York sounds boring, but M&T is headquartered in Buffalo, and they've really done a terrific job. They have been one of the go-to banks when other banks get into trouble. So Wilmington Trust was something that they came to the rescue and bought. Hudson City, something else that they have pending in the future. But they posted very nice results this morning, beat estimates, and I think they've got very good growth prospects. And we actually own the warrants. They give you a little bit more leverage to the upside. Those were created during the whole TARP process, and the government auctioned them off, and they're publicly traded. So that's where we participated there. We also like Regions quite a bit, and we like that more as a credit recovery
Regions.
Down in the Southeast.
Okay.
Yeah, Regions is the symbol RF.
Mm-hmm.
Credit has gotten a lot better. Housing's gotten a lot better. And, you know, the hardest hit parts of the country were clearly the sea and sand states, and Regions down in the Southeast had plenty of exposure, and the recoveries are going very nicely. And I think it's also got some pretty good growth prospects based upon recovery and based upon maintaining a very conservative balance sheet, you know, during the troubling times. So what the companies have had too much capital tied to short-term debt instruments been able to do has been reposition those into new loans or reposition them into securities that have higher yields. So as they're able to come out of the regulatory squeeze, they're able to actually, you know, earn some more money by putting some of that capital to work in less conservative instruments.
Hmm. What do you make of the move now towards the higher capital requirements, the latest that the FDIC and the OCC have approved is this move to increase leverage ratios for banks, what, just about doubling them pretty much. Is this going to, you know, shift the deck at all for the banks, the big banks relative to the regionals and the smaller banks, for example? Is it going to be sort of a one-time or an adjustment for the banks that occurs over a year or two, and then they've, you know, kind of factored it in and that you just, you know, go on with your profit outlook, et cetera? Or is it something that, again, is a real game changer?
Well, you know, as proposed, it doesn't appear to be catastrophic for the big banks. A lot of them can get there. But there is devil in the details. How are they going to count derivatives? Are they counted on a netting basis? Are they counted on a gross basis? You know, are things like cash counted in the balance sheet? Are things like short-term treasury counted? So there is a lot of detail that's important here. I think the bank regulators have done a good job in trying to get ahead of Washington, D.C., where Brown Bitter has a bill that wants the banks to hold 15% capital. That bill is silly. We still have a very fragile recovery. And if you had to force the big banks to get to that number, you would really take away a lot of lending capacity out of the economy.
But would that too, I mean, there's Anat Admati from Stanford University, a passionate defender of that view, making them hold more equity capital. Alan Meltzer, Carnegie Mellon, their view seems to be that, yes, it would be an adjustment, but once you get there, you've made the adjustment, and you have banks that are truly safer and sounder.
Well, you can create so much safety that you completely stop lending.
But why would people stop lending?
I mean, because that capital wouldn't be created easily, and it wouldn't be gotten easily. And in the meantime, the banks would hoard capital in order to build to those ratios. So in an economy that badly needs capital, and actually badly needs stimulus because really there's no demand for loans. I mean, the real big issue in this economy is we're just trudging along in very, very low GDP numbers, and there's not a lot of demand for lending. But if there was demand for lending and the bigger banks had to reach those 15% capital numbers, they wouldn't be able to get there very easily, and lending would be curtailed dramatically, and that would be pretty tough. And the other thing is we compete on a global platform. And if you look at Basel III, it was set up, you know, to basically ensure that global banks had a standard. If we want to compete with those other banks, we've got to be on a level playing field. Now, clearly the new capital requirements by the domestic regulators are higher capital requirements than the Basel III ratios. Most of the big banks are pretty close to those numbers. Like I said, the devil is in the details. But there's no doubt that you need to have capital to lend, and the banks have really rebuilt capital. I mean, to compare today's banks with the banks pre-crisis is silly, because the capital is much, much higher than it was pre-crisis. I mean, the leverage that was out there was amazing. And, you know, all of the academic pundits can say what they want about banks needing more capital and would prevent failures, but how many big banks actually failed? I mean, Washington Mutual failed.
Well,
right.
There was a lot of government support in there. Many say that Citigroup was a bank you own, was insolvent, and it had not been for the Fed, it would have failed, been broken up, you know, and TARP. So,
well, one of the issues was that Citi didn't have a lot of capital. Its capital ratios were incredibly low.
Mm-hmm.
So Citi has actually multiples of the amount of capital it had at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. So as an investor, don't investors want to see banks that are well capitalized now? After what the banks went through, isn't that something that people like you look at to say, hey, this is a sound bank? Or would you prefer to buy banks with very low capital?
No, I actually believe that the large banks have very strong capital ratios. I think the CCAR results that the Fed put these banks through, and the CCAR tests are quite strenuous. I mean, they allowed most of the banks to return some capital to shareholders, dividends, buybacks. You want to own something that has a healthy return on equity. You don't want an absurd return on equity, because that means you're taking too much risk. That means you've got too much leverage. I mean, look, Lehman failed, and it wasn't a bank, but it was levered over 30 times to one. You know, Bear Stearns was highly levered. It wasn't a bank either. And, you know, I'll make the point that a large bank, J.P. Morgan, had the wherewithal to step up and rescue Bear Stearns, had the wherewithal to step up and rescue Countrywide. Bank of America stepped up and unfortunately took it on the chin with Countrywide, I'm sorry. But they took Merrill Lynch's balance sheet onto their books. So they had the strength to be able to pull that off. I mean, the real injection of capital in the banks wasn't because the banks actually needed the capital. They needed the vote of confidence. They needed people to go, okay, the government's standing behind them. That was the most important factor.
So in terms of the landscape now, you've got the, you know, the regulators and the ratios on one side. You've got banks that are healthier on the other. Is there going to be more consolidation? Are we going to see regionals gobbling up smaller regionals and smaller banks? Is there going to be a move in that part of the banking industry to get almost as big as the big banks and compete more with them?
We're you know, the top five, I think, have been determined. I don't think we're going to get anything close to that. There are different regulatory hurdles once you get over $10 billion in size. So, you know, that's a real decision. Do you want to cross 10? Do you want to cross 50 billion and become, you know, a CCAR bank? So there are numbers prohibiting sort of, you know, from a regulatory perspective, more transactions taking place. But a lot of the merger activity is taking place below the radar screens. There are, you know, $500 million in asset banks, billion-dollar in asset banks, because it's too tough, you know, without loan demand, without a great yield curve, with lots of rules, you know, with all these rules, the small banks have to hire people to comply with those rules, and it just blows away their economic, you know, structure. They can't return their cost of capital, so the best thing to do is to seek a stronger partner and sell yourself.
So you do think this is a possibility?
It's a probability, and I think the small banks will be active consolidators today, over the next couple of years, you know, probably for the next 3 to 5 years. And, you know, what's really nice about this investment climate for some of the small and mid-sized banks is, you know, during the peak of, pre-crisis, you had companies do uneconomic transactions. They'd buy other companies for 5 times book value, and you could never earn that back. You know, Wachovia obviously comes to mind as a company that paid too much for a lot of acquisitions. But today's acquisitions, the buyers are finding bargains that are so good that both sets of shareholders win. And you know, if you take SCBT, which is a company down in South Carolina, they've been buying the Carolinas and Georgia. You know, they've done two terrific transactions. Their stock has gone up on announcement of both transactions, and they're going to keep building a, you know, building a bank. Okay. They're about $8 billion in assets post what they have going here.
All right. Anton Schutz, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Anton Schutz from Mendon Capital.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.